Hi, and welcome to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast. Each week, we talk with patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, or healthcare professionals and do what Cure does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. When patients receive a diagnosis of retroperitoneal sarcoma, they deal not only with the shock of learning they have cancer, but also with the fact that the disease is extremely rare. Dr. Margot Shoup is an expert in performing the complex surgery needed to remove these often very large tumors. This week on the Cure Talks Cancer podcast, Dr. Shoup sat down with Cure to shed some light on the disease and what patients need to know about its diagnosis and treatment.
All right, so why don't we just start, you know, for our audience of patients, what is sarcoma?
So sarcoma is actually a malignant tumor arising from the soft tissues of the body. It's something you don't hear about very often. It's typically coming from fat or coming from muscle. It could be coming from nerves, but it's really the fatty tissue, even from bones sometimes. There's lots of different types of sarcoma.
Okay, and so where does it usually occur in the body?
There's the soft tissue sarcomas and there's bone sarcomas. The soft tissue sarcomas typically arise in the extremity, and the thigh is the most common site for it. But it can be anywhere in your legs or your arms. It can be arising in the truncal area. When we say truncal, we mean along the abdominal wall. Sarcomas also can arise from bones. And then they also can arise from the retroperitoneum, which is in the abdomen, but alongside the organs, not actually in the organs. And that's why we call it retroperitoneum.
So that is fairly rare, right? The retroperitoneal version of the disease. How rare is that?
It's very rare. So sarcomas in general only occur in about 8,000 to 9,000 people a year in this country. And of those, only about 15% are actually retroperitoneal. So it's actually quite rare.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of different types of sarcomas, if you look at them under the microscope, even though they may be arising from fat or tissue, fatty tissue or muscle or nerve or bone, when they're looked at on the microscope, there's up to 50 different types of sarcoma just because of the way the cells are organized. Yeah.
And so because this is in the retroperitoneum, is it sort of considered like a GI or a GU cancer? Or treat it as one, or is it really considered its own separate thing, and are there similarities?
No, it's typically grouped in with GI tumors because the people that treat these kind of tumors typically treat other GI tumors as well. And because it's in the abdomen where the rest of your gastrointestinal tract is, they get grouped into GI tumors. But it's really very different. There's really nothing else similar to a GI tumor other than the fact that they're located near the gastrointestinal tract. There are a lot of differences with retroperitoneal sarcoma, the way they're diagnosed, the way they're treated, the way they spread. It's completely different than any other kinds of cancers that we have.
If it spreads, because it's in the abdomen, what organs does it spread to?
I mean, it's very interesting because we typically see these retroperitoneal sarcomas when you treat them, and when they come back, they come back in the same place they started. So they usually spread within the abdomen somewhere, and probably isn't really spreading so much as that there were already some cells there that just hadn't been identified before. So most typically they spread somewhere in the abdomen, but honestly, they can go anywhere. They can go to your liver, they go to your lung, they can go to a lot of different sites, but the most common place is just to be somewhere widespread within the abdomen.
So how is the cancer usually found in people and at what stage?
Yeah, it's a good question. So, you know, most people don't even know they have this because, you, believe it or not, even in somebody who's very thin, you have a lot of room inside your abdomen. You have your small bowel and your large bowel and your other organs like your liver and your pancreas. But a sarcoma, when they develop and grow at the retroperitoneal area, they tend to push these other organs out of the way, but they don't actually invade into them. And so quite frequently, people don't have any symptoms. Then these tumors can get to be very large and patients don't even realize that they have them. So they can get to be 10, 15, 20 centimeter, 20 inches even in size. And people don't realize they have them because they're not blocking their bowels. They're not causing diabetes. They're not causing jaundice. They're not causing liver failure or renal failure. So very typically it's because somebody goes in and they say, no, I just don't feel right. Something's wrong. Sometimes people actually feel a mass in their abdomen when they're getting dressed or in the shower or soaping themselves down, they feel something and that's how they identify it. And the other time that people find it is when they're getting a CT scan or ultrasound for something completely unrelated and we happen to see it. So an incidental finding, but it's not common that people have symptoms until they get to be very large to the point where they're actually pushing up on their diaphragm and they have a hard time breathing. They're losing weight because it's pushing on their stomach and they're having a hard time eating. So it's nothing specific. It's just something's changed in their daily habits. And that's what brings them to their doctor to get it checked out.
If a tumor like that gets really big without being detected, does that mean that it's normally at the point where it's already spreading when it's found, or does it depend on the particular tumor and how aggressive it is?
It depends on the aggressiveness of the particular tumor. So just because a sarcoma gets to be quite large doesn't mean it's more likely to have spread. It's not uncommon for us to see these tumors that are very, very large and have not spread. So the good news is that even when they're large, we typically can still remove them with surgery as long as they're not invading a lot of the surrounding structures. But typically the size isn't what's so important as far as being able to treat it. It's what it's invading. What other things is it keeping us from being able to take out? But there are some very aggressive forms of sarcomas. So like I said, there's several different types that you can look at under the microscope and see. And one of the things we can do is identify how fast growing a sarcoma is. And the ones that are the more rapidly growing or high grade tumors are the ones that are more likely to spread regardless of size, but certainly the bigger they are, the more likely it is.
Yeah, because I read that if it has spread, sometimes entire organs that are next to where the tumor site may have to be removed as well.
That's correct. Okay.
So, and why, so which organs might be affected in a case like that? And why does the whole organ have to come out and maybe not just whatever part of it is affected by the spread of the cancer?
Well, sometimes only a part of it does need to come out. And so the retroperitoneal sarcoma's most common organs that are otherwise involved, and it's not really from spreading so much, but from the tumor itself just sort of growing into them and pushing against them, or involving the blood supply to that organ, that if you have to take the sarcoma out, you have to take out the blood supply to an organ, you need to take the organ out because it's not going to survive. So the most common ones are a portion of the intestine, not uncommonly the colon, is a source of where the tumors are rising. Not inside the colon, like typical colon cancer that you hear about, but along the fatty areas outside of the colon is where they can arise from. And in order to get the tumor out, you have to take out that portion of the colon. But it's rare to have to take out the entire colon, just the part that is actually involved by that cancer. Other organs that are really very commonly involved are the kidney. The tumors tend to really push up on the kidney, often either invade into the kidney or surround the vasculature, the blood supply to the kidney, or the tube called the ureter that brings the urine from the kidney down to the bladder. If the blood supply or the ureter involves by tumor, and the only way to really get this tumor out is to remove the blood supply or the ureter, then you have to remove the kidney because the kidney isn't going to be functioning like that. So that's very common, actually, probably one of the second most common organs to have to remove. Another one is the adrenal gland. The adrenal gland is very close to the kidney, and so often if the kidney is involved, the adrenal gland is involved. Sometimes the spleen is involved, sometimes part of the pancreas. It would be very rare to consider having to remove the entire pancreas for a sarcoma, but to remove part of it is, you know, not uncommon. To have to remove somebody's spleen because of a sarcoma involvement is actually not that uncommon either. But those are really the most common areas of the tumors that are involved. It's rare to be involving the liver to the point where you have to remove part of the liver. It's not unheard of, but it's rare.
Mm-hmm. So it must be a difficult kind of surgery to recover from. I mean, what does the recovery look like for people, and what kinds of long-lasting side effects might they have from that?
No, I guess it depends on what we end up having to do in surgery, what the recovery is. So the best case scenario is we do the surgery, we remove the tumor, we don't have to remove any surrounding organs, which isn't very common, but that's the best case scenario. And typically these patients are having to be operated on with an open incision, not a minimally invasive or laparoscopic or robotic, just simply because of the size by the time they get diagnosed. If the patients are doing well and the tumor comes out, honestly, patients sometimes are home in about 3 or 4 days after the surgery from the hospital. As soon as they've completely recovered and they're off IV pain medicine and they're walking and able to have their normal bodily functions again, they often can go home. And it's kind of funny, but many of these patients, once they have surgery and they go home, they actually start feeling better in a lot of ways almost immediately. They don't realize that they were not feeling well for a while until this big tumor is removed. And now all of a sudden they realize, well, I guess I really wasn't feeling well from that. But like any surgery, it takes about 4 to 6 weeks to really completely recover to getting back to your normal lifestyle. Any major operation that requires a big open incision, it just takes time for your body to readjust. That's the best case scenario. I mean, if you end up having to remove more organs, then sometimes it can take a little bit longer to recover. But for the most part, you know, surgery, if it's able to be done completely and remove all the tumor, most people should be back to a pretty normal lifestyle within about 4 to 6 weeks.
Okay. And are there patients who can't have the surgery because the disease is too advanced?
Sure. Yeah. There's definitely people that we are unable to remove it for various reasons. Maybe it's surrounding some major vessels that your body can't survive without. And so if you have to take those vessels out, your bowels may all die, or your liver could die, or those blood vessels are headed down to give your blood supply to your legs. And in order to take those out, your legs would have to be amputated. There's all kinds of reasons. There might be someone has both kidneys are involved by tumor, and we really don't advocate doing a surgery that's going to force somebody into dialysis for life if you take both kidneys out. So there are definitely times that we are unable to remove these tumors. The majority of the patients, though, with these retroperitoneal sarcomas that have not spread to other organs can be removed by surgery. The majority of them are. That's the good news, is they're usually what we call resectable, meaning it can be removed.
So if somebody has, if it can't be removed by surgery, how are they treated?
It's very unfortunate, because surgery is really the only chance for a cure for sarcoma. And so if surgery is not an option, then there's other therapies that we look into. And for retroperitoneal sarcomas, it's a little unusual to offer radiation because these tumors are so big. It's just a huge area to radiate. And so it's very challenging to deliver radiation without damaging a lot of other structures along the way. Not unheard of, like I said, but it's very unusual to be able to do that. We do have some chemotherapy agents that we can try to use to see if it can shrink the tumors. Unfortunately, they just usually don't work. Maybe 10%, 15% of the time at the most are we going to see any kind of response to chemotherapy. Although when we do see a response and the tumor shrinks, it could be quite remarkable, and it can be great. But people have to have their expectation, realizing that the overwhelming odds are that it's not going to make a difference. Other things that can be tried are immunotherapy, so targeted therapies directly for this tumor. You know, with sarcoma being such a rare tumor, we don't have nearly the data or the clinical trials that we have to find these kinds of targeted therapies at work, like we do for something like lung cancer or breast cancer or colon cancer, that are very common tumors in this country, that we can have a lot of people go on clinical trials and look at a lot of different tissue types and see what works. And so a lot of the patients that are on have sarcomas that are unable to have surgery really are looking at a clinical trial to see if there's something that can be targeted for their tumor. Or some trials, like our institution at New Vance Health, has a trial open in partnership with Memorial Sloan Kettering called an IMPACT trial, where we can actually take a piece of the tumor itself and look at it, do a genomic analysis, and see if we can identify a target for that individual patient. And so it's a very individualized treatment. A lot of this is still sort of in the experimental phase, but this is where we're hoping to go with these kinds of treatments.
Okay. So what are the risk factors? It looked to me like there may be an inherited aspect of this disease in a lot of people.
There is some inherited forms of these. The majority of the patients, though, who have sarcomas have no risk factors. And people who do have sarcoma with a family history of other diseases, sometimes anywhere from ulcerative colitis to other kinds of diseases, we're looking for that. If we know that somebody has a family history, hopefully they've had genetic counseling and they're being studied to make sure they don't develop a sarcoma. But I'll be quite honest with you, most people who get this tumor have no known risk factors to us. It's very frustrating.
is it difficult to get a diagnosis because it's rare? And if, you know, if so, how do people go about that? And who should be there, the primary person treating this rare disease?
Well, I'm a surgical oncologist, so I have a little bit of a biased opinion on this. And I think that since the primary treatment for this is surgery, that a surgical oncologist, a cancer surgeon, well, that's what they do, is specialize in cancer, who has special training in sarcoma, should really be involved from day one in helping to identify this disease. It can be diagnosed. So with most patients, when they get a CT scan, for instance, that shows a big mass, we can get a biopsy of that. Radiology can actually stick a needle into the tumor and get a biopsy of that and look it under the microscope. That small biopsy isn't going to tell us the whole picture about what's going on with this huge tumor that people have, but at least it'll give us an idea if it looks like a sarcoma or not, because that's very important. Because sometimes these big tumors can actually be a lymphoma, not a sarcoma. And so you want to be sure that you know what you're treating before you start doing it. And so it's we typically get a biopsy, although we don't always, if it's very clear that that's what it is. So the patients typically will get into the primary care doctor. We then get them in to see a surgical oncologist up front. Medical oncologists are almost always involved in the discussions because sometimes chemotherapy may have to play a role. Diagnosis is then made, and then the next form of treatment is really based on the surgeon's expertise and ability to remove the cancer.
I don't know. I don't think we talk too much about whether this cancer tends to come back. I'm wondering, you know, what the anticipated outcome is for patients who have the surgery and it's successful. You know, how likely is recurrence for those patients?
It's a really good question because, again, it depends on the subtype. It depends on how aggressive the tumor is in the first place. Some tumors are very slow growing, low grade. Patients could have had them for years before they knew they had it. And the risk of those recurring after surgery are very, very low. Other ones that are a higher grade, the risk of recurring after surgery can be as high as 75%. Mm-hmm. And so typically, if you lump everybody together with a retroperitoneal sarcoma, you can say our 5-year survival is somewhere around 60 to 70%, which doesn't sound that great, but there's some people that are doing much worse and some that are doing much better. The problem with looking at 5-year survival, that's typically what we look at in cancer for 5-year, thinking that it's more likely to be a cure. But sarcomas can come back at any time. And we see patients who had their first surgery 10 years ago and now have it recurred 10 years later in the same area where it started. So the risk of recurrence is real. And so once somebody has a diagnosis of sarcoma and they have surgery, no matter how successful it is, they have to be prepared that it can come back. And they have to be prepared to undergo really quite frequent CT scans for the rest of their life to be sure if it comes back that we can find it as early as possible so we can start treating it as early as possible.
And I'm guessing that people should make sure when they're diagnosed that they absolutely get the information on how aggressive the cancer is, that they make sure that that's done, that an analysis is done to see how aggressive it is so they can sort of anticipate how much surveillance they need.
Yeah, and sometimes you don't actually know that for sure until after the surgery. So the biopsy alone is hard to tell you all the information that you need to know because you're just biopsying a small section of the tumor. So these tumors tend to be different. Different areas look different. Some areas of the tumor are high grade, some areas of the tumor are low grade. And really you have to go on the worst area and put your prognosis based on that. So it's often not until after surgery. Pathology then takes a look at everything, all the whole tumor under a microscope. And if it's truly a high grade or aggressive tumor, then yes, of course, as a patient, you need to be aware that that's the type of cancer that you have. That's a high grade sarcoma, because the follow-up would probably involve imaging every 3 months for a number of years until we're confident that there's no recurrence. And then we spread them out to every 6 months, and then you can even go over a year. But even for your entire life, you're probably going to be getting CAT scans at least every year for follow-up for these. If they're very low grade and they're slow growing, you really don't have to get scans as frequently as every 3 months. You can spread them out from the very beginning, but you still need to have them. So, you know, we hate to use statistics for patients because whatever happens to you is 100%, right? And so we all always hesitate to do that. But patients really should be aware that, you know, that they're considered high risk, then we need to help them understand why it's so important to get this follow-up imaging.
I don't know, is it difficult to biopsy this because of where it is? And I'm wondering if there's a chance to diagnose using liquid biopsy or you know, or even to detect the cancers much earlier before they get really large like that using liquid biopsy.
So typically it's not very difficult to biopsy it because they're usually big enough that there's a window where you can actually put a needle into it through an image guided biopsy to get some tissue. Every once in a while, it's in a challenging location. There might be too much bowel around it or something that makes it a little bit dangerous to biopsy. And unfortunately, unlike other cancers where we do have tumor markers, we really don't have anything like that for sarcoma. There's no liquid biopsy. There's no blood test. It's very unfortunate. Hopefully, you know, it's our hope that down the road, we will know how to diagnose these earlier. And that would actually help us a lot and follow up too, if we could do more than just imaging, if we could do a blood test to see if the tumor is coming back rather than just an imaging, that would be very helpful. For instance, for ovarian cancer and colon cancer, we have blood tests that we can do that we do frequently to see how patients are doing by following these tumor markers and making sure they're not coming up, which would make us be concerned that the cancers come back. Something like that for sarcoma currently just doesn't exist. Again, it's very frustrating when these are rare enough tumors, there just isn't the data that you have on more common tumors, and there's just not as nearly as much research on these cancers to be able to give us the information that we need.
Okay, so I think that covers the questions I had. Is there anything else that I didn't ask that we should talk about or that people should know about this cancer type?
I think the most important thing for people to understand is that it's very frequently diagnosed already at a late stage because most people don't realize they have it. And the staging of retroperitoneal sarcoma includes the size. And most patients, I should say, maybe that's not true, but a lot of patients aren't diagnosed until the tumors are at least 15 centimeters in size. Mm. And so if you break that down, you know, each centimeter is about 2.5 inches. So, you know, at least 6 or 7 inches in size before people even get diagnosed. Many are much bigger than that, much bigger than that. You know, we're talking 20 inches, 15 inches. Mm. So by definition, the majority of people are already somewhat of an advanced stage, but that shouldn't keep somebody from seeking attention. And I tell you that if you're being told by anybody that this is something that cannot be taken care of from a surgical standpoint for whatever reason, you really need to get in to see somebody who specializes in this. Cancer surgeons are trained to do this. Not all cancer surgeons are, but people who have been trained in GI cancers are typically trained in sarcomas as well. And I would just be very careful that you look and see where your surgeon has trained and what their experience is with these kinds of tumors, because it your first operation is your best bet for a cure. So you want to make sure it's done right.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cure Talks Cancer Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode. Or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cure Talks Cancer Podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter at @cure_magazine or Facebook at @curemagazine.